welcome to Open Minds Radio with your host, Alejandra Rojas, former official spokesperson for the Mutual UFO Network. Alejandra has been a UFO paranormal researcher and journalist for nearly a decade and has logged hours in the field investigating the paranormal up close and personal. And now Open Minds Radio presents evidence and the latest news regarding the UFO phenomenon. Here's your host, Alejandra Rojas.
Hello and welcome to Open Minds Radio, your UFO news authority. This is Alejandro Rojas, and we have another spectacular guest, and I always am excited about the guest. You know, and I'm equally excited. I really am genuinely excited with all these people, whether they be a sergeant in the Air Force who touched a UFO, or whether they be our guest today, David Walks as Bear, who is an intertribal elder. He's an author, a speaker, a syndicated columnist. He's done it all, and he's going to be here talking to us about some of the UFO research that he's done. And he's also going to be talking about some of the Native American legends and folklore and their connection to UFOs. So that's a great topic, one of my favorite topics. I haven't spoken at length with David Walks as Bear before, so I'm excited to hear what he has to say. Seems like a great guy, and he has some really interesting fiction novels that he writes, so that's exciting. I do have to say, or I want to say, hi to my cousin Jim. This is kind of funny. You know, my mom told me, hey, your cousin Jim listens to all your shows, and I was thinking, oh, that's great, I'm going to say hi. And then, of course, she has to make it a big deal in the family and tell my aunt, and they got to call each other back and forth. I'm going to say hi on the show and make a big embarrassing deal out of it. So sorry about that, Jim, but thanks for listening. It's always exciting to hear of other listeners out there that you didn't know you had. So that's really cool. A couple other things I wanted to mention. We have been picked up by another radio network. We're being played on Black Vault Radio. That's headed up by John Greenwald, who started the blackvault.com type of thing. And this is, he's an amazing guy. We're going to have him on next month because as a high school student, he started putting in Freedom of Information Act requests on UFOs and was receiving a lot of stuff. In fact, he's probably got, I think he still has the largest database on documents. He even had people, I think it was the CIA or someone, harassing him at his high school over this. And we'll be talking to him soon. He's a great guy. He always does the MUFON symposiums and does the emceeing there. But we're real happy to be on his network of great radio shows. I also want to remind you yet again, and I'll not be reminding you this in another month here, a couple of weeks, because it's Roswell, and it's coming up real quick here, the July 4th weekend from the 1st to the 4th. It's the Roswell Festival in Roswell, New Mexico. Of course, the famous alleged UFO crash out there. That's going to be a lot of fun. They have fireworks, they have parades, they have contests, they have rides, they have a bunch of different vendors. It's always a lot of fun, so come check that out. You can read more about it at our website at openminds.tv. And I do want to remind you, you can also watch us live at openminds.tv if you want. We have chat there, or you can chat back and forth, and you can ask questions from our guests, and you can also see us live, me and Jason here. And we're looking really good in our Open Minds polos here, so you're going to want to check that out. That's at openminds.tv on the radio tab. Speaking of Jason, every week we talk about some of the latest UFOs in the conventional media headlines, and we have our news correspondent, Jason McClellan, here to share the news with us. Hello, Jason.
Greetings, Alejandro.
Greetings, my friend.
Hello, Phoenix, and hello, world. This is your Open Minds news brief for Monday, June 14th, 2010. I'll start with a story that seemed to pop up everywhere last week. AOL News just did a story on the well-known UFO researcher Stanton Friedman, a friend of ours, and someone we've had as a guest on the show recently. Stanton Friedman is a nuclear physicist who worked on highly classified programs involving nuclear aircraft and fission and fusion rockets. As he has mentioned in countless lectures around the world, Friedman told AOL News that we are dealing with a cosmic Watergate. Having investigated the UFO phenomenon for more than 53 years, Friedman believes that there are people within major governments who have known that some UFOs are alien spacecraft since 1947. Friedman's research was instrumental in uncovering evidence related to the famous Roswell incident. At 75, he continues his research and lectures frequently at colleges and conferences around the globe. And, if you're lucky, you'll be seeing Stan Friedman here in Phoenix at the International UFO Congress in February 2011.
That is right, our Congress, and we're going to have the famous Stan Friedman. Of course, people who go to these conferences a lot are probably think, I've seen him a million times, but he's always a lot of fun to see. He's very witty. He was on our show, and that was a lot of fun. And it's great to see they were taking him very seriously, too, on these different articles that were written. And AOL seems to have picked up UFOs lately, and they're writing serious articles.
They seem to be writing a lot about it, and you're right. It's interesting the tone that they're taking with this. I mean, in the past, you know, if they happen to do an article on someone like Stan Friedman, it was sort of goofy, sort of tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
But this seemed to be, you know, taken very well, and a lot of media outlets picked up on the story.
He's a great guy. He really, you know, a lot of people think, oh, it's basic stuff for people who have researched this a lot, but he's really a great spokesman for this field. He's very articulate, does a great job.
He's a great speaker. He's fun to watch. The end of NASA's shuttle program has launched a new space race led by entrepreneurs. It would appear that Las Vegas-based Bigelow Aerospace is leading the pack. The company is working on a 36-person space hotel. And while this may sound like a wild idea that is decades away from being a reality, the company already has two inflatable test modules orbiting the Earth and hopes to have the hotel operating as soon as 2016. If you're the kind of person who loves to plan your vacation well in advance, you can already book your stay at Bigelow's Space Hotel for the low, low price of $25 million for a 30-day space vacation.
$25 million? Gotta be saving my pennies.
Maybe we could chip in.
Yeah, split it.
We could probably share a room, right?
Yeah, totally.
I don't know. I saw some pictures of those rooms, and they're kind of cramped quarters.
Yeah, well, you gotta do what you gotta do.
I'll wait. I think the price will come down.
Fine, I'll have to find another roommate then.
We'll see. In UK news, British astronomers are constructing a major radio telescope to search for the origins of the universe and to find intelligent alien life forms. The first stage of the European Low Frequency Array, or LOFAR, telescope involves 96 radio antenna being erected this week at the Chilbolton Observatory near Andover, Hampshire. Then another 5,000 antenna will be stationed all over Europe. A supercomputer based in the Netherlands will use digital electronics to combine the signals from the antenna to make images of the entire radio sky. The LOFAR telescope will also be able to monitor space weather and potentially search for alien intelligence.
Pretty impressive piece of equipment there.
A little similar to what SETI's doing, but this is big for Europe. It's
interesting, too, because it's kind of like if people have seen the HART program, which everybody's very afraid of, kind of this low-frequency program going out of Alaska, that there's lots of rumors about what they do with it. But it's similar. It's an antenna that comes out of the ground, and that it's pretty simple like that. And they're going to be putting these all throughout Europe, so Europe is going to be like this giant HARP station.
Keep it simple, stupid.
Conspiracy party going to be going on there.
This story is pretty cool. A Japanese space agency successfully unfurled a solar sail in space for the first time last week. Solar sail technology is important because it offers the best hope for deep space exploration by eliminating the need to carry fuel. I think it's really cool that we went from these super rocket booster spaceships that go into space back to sails.
Yeah.
Seems kind of neat, back to the sail ships.
Well, I think it's Star Trek where that was like one of their first ships.
Yeah.
Was a solar sail ship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I wonder about space pirates. Is that next?
Yeah, probably.
In other news, let's see, some more European news. In a recent interview with Kherson Ilyumzhinov, president of the World Chess Federation, he commented on the attention being given to recent statements he made during an encounter, or let's see. I'm screwing my story up, Alejandro.
Ilyumzhinov.
It's such a great Russian name, and I can't say it. Vilyomzinov.
There you go.
Okay. He's the president of the World Chess Federation. He has been, and he's running for re-election. And he commented recently on the attention being given to a statement he made about encounters he's had with extraterrestrials. He said that he doesn't understand why his statements are attracting so much attention now, because he's talked openly about his encounters for years. Talking about people's resistance to accept the existence of extraterrestrials, he went on to say that most people have never seen God but still believe in the existence of God.
Yeah, I mean, he's standing by his ground. I mean, a president of a country out there, Tibet, or the Buddhist state out there, and he's standing his ground. He's not saying, oh, they misrepresented what I had to say or anything. He's saying, yeah, I hang out with aliens. You haven't.
It was slightly amusing because this story was in the New York Times.
Yeah.
But what's amusing is it was in the chess section of New York Times.
Oh, really?
The only thing that has to do with chess is he's the president of the Chess Federation. But
yeah, that is.
They had this nice article about his UFO encounters.
Well, maybe the Chess Federation will go cosmic, you know, interplanetary before any other organization just because of his foresight.
They're ready for it.
Yeah.
That's it for the news. Remember to check out these stories and more at openminds.tv, your source for UFO-related news. I'm your Open Mind news correspondent, Jason McClellan, and you've been briefed. Back to you, Alejandro.
You know, another exciting story about Mars this week, I don't know if you saw it, just came out today, actually, was that, of course, and I think everybody kind of had already thought about this, but 3.5 billion years ago, Mars was the blue planet, that it had 10 times more water and than the oceans here in Earth. So,
we keep finding new stuff about Mars all the time.
What was that?
There I go. We keep finding new stuff about Mars almost every week.
I know. It's absolutely incredible. It's just a, I mean, at any moment now where they're going to find something, and who knows if it'll be as small as a microbe or some kind of Martian whale that's 10 times the size of our whale.
It seems that now that NASA's, you know, sort of lessening its space exploration in part, there seems to be a lot more stuff coming out now. All of these probes that are out in space are coming back. There was one just recovered. They recovered it in Australia. Was that a Japanese probe? It came back with samples from asteroids or something.
Yeah, I can't remember the details on that.
I can't either.
But it is exciting, but it reminds me of something, too. It reminds me of the magazine. First of all, our current magazine, the second issue, is out in the stores right now. You should be able to walk into your Barnes & Noble, and it should be very visible.
As well as Borders.
And Borders. So go check out the magazine. And I'm excited about an article you wrote for the upcoming magazine on space critters. Some of these UFOs could be critters.
Right. That'll be in the August issue.
Which is great. Includes a great photo that Jason took in Mexico of interesting UFO.
I'm sure we'll talk about that more when it gets closer.
Exactly. So, and this thing even almost looks like some sort of space amoeba.
Space jellyfish amoeba.
Yeah, space jellyfish.
Exactly.
So, real exciting and some great articles, of course, in this issue of the magazine. It's all mostly centered around the Vatican and Vatican history, and there's a lot of great insight in that article. So, check it out. You can go find out at openminds.tv. Stay tuned for our wonderful guest coming up after the break, David Walks as Bear. You're listening to Open Minds Radio.
Open Minds Production is proud to present the 20th anniversary of the International UFO Congress, coming to its new home at the Radisson Port McDowell Resort and Casino in Scottsdale, Arizona. This is the premier annual event for UFO researchers, enthusiasts, and the general public with an interest in mysterious phenomena. Come listen to expert ufologists, government officials, and respected scientists presenting information relating to UFOs, extraterrestrials, crop circles, abductions, cover-ups, and more at the largest UFO conference in the country. The 20th anniversary of the International UFO Congress takes place February 23rd through February 27th. Visit UFOCongress.com for more information, including sponsorship and vendor opportunities.
You're listening to Open Minds Radio with Alejandro Rojas on KFNX News Talk Radio 1100.
Welcome back to Open Minds Radio. I want to remind you of one cool thing that you'll find at openminds.tv, and that's some of the video stories that we put up there. We've got a great one on James Fox, who was our guest not too long ago, And that's something our video producer Tom puts up, and he does an awesome job editing these things together. So you're going to have to check that out. We had him in the studio, James Fox, and did an interview, so it was a lot of fun. And this video interview that he put up is a lot of fun as well. Speaking of fun, I'm looking forward to having fun with our guest, David Waxesbear, and I believe he's on the line right now. Are you there?
I'm here, sir. I'm here.
All right. Great. It's good to hear from you.
Yeah, you too.
So I guess let's get started with you're an author, you write a columnist, and you do all of these various things. And on top of it all, you're also a UFO researcher.
Yeah, well, probably the lesser of all of them would be that one. But I'm a novice in that field. Just, it's one of those things that I'm really fascinated with, though.
Yeah. How did you get fascinated with it and become a researcher?
Well, let's see. The first sighting that I ever had, and I've only had a couple, so it's not like I'm you know, some kind of aficionado. But I think I was like 14. I went over to my buddy's house, knocked on his door, and you know, his brother came to the door. He wasn't home, but while he was coming to the door, I could hear him in the kitchen working his way that way. It was night, probably 11 o'clock at night. And I let you know, we were kids, we were running around chasing back in the 60s. You could do that kind of stuff. And so I looked up in the sky and a lot of stars. Pretty night, you know, and I watched this little tiny blue light that was just bouncing around, going every which way. I mean, it was way up there. Now, this is probably back in 68, I'm guessing, 69, somewhere around there. Anyway, his brother has just got back from overseas. He was air defense artillery in the Army and stationed in Germany. And so, I mean, he was used to looking up in the sky. They did a lot of that kind of stuff. And so when he came out, he, you know, the first thing I asked him was, you know, look at that. And it's Dave here, your brother here. But anyway, he looked up in the sky. What the heck is that? I mean, neither one of us knew. We watched it for a few minutes. So at that point in time, I guess this little blue light, like I said, was just dancing and bouncing all over the sky. And as a kid, that's another story, a different time. But it was a little blue light that used to run around our bedroom up in the ceiling.
Oh,
but
wow!
Anyway, yeah, just weird stuff, you know. But anyhow, that was part of the reason why it fascinated me, I guess. And then the next instance that I ran into something like that was while I was on active duty in the Coast Guard, it was me and three other guys on a 41-foot utility boat out in Lake Michigan, and we chased these little orange balls across Lake Michigan toward Milwaukee for probably about 4.5 hours, I guess. We didn't have any cases running. It was a quiet night. Group gave us the okay, and so we tried to get close to them, but these things would bounce up and down on the water and just, you know, they would meld into each other and bounce away. It was bizarre. So in essence, I guess that's what it was, always those things that stayed in the back of my mind. And you know, I'm not stupid enough to think that we're not alone. In my culture, everybody knows what a starman is, you know. So anyway.
Maybe let's talk about that, because that's one thing, kind of like with me. You know, it's kind of a background with the Mexican background and Native American background. It's not as big of a deal, you know. It's like there's weird stuff out there, and our culturally, it's not as big of a deal. And I mean, and that's pretty much the same with Native American cultures often.
Oh, sure, it's a given, is what you're saying, and that's just the way that it is. You know, that most leaves on a tree are green. You know, some may be yellow, some may be orange, but as a rule, they're green, and you accept that as just an everyday occurrence.
Right.
It's part of life, you know. A rattlesnake can bite you, you know, and
right.
It can kill you. You accept that. So, yeah, you bet. American Indian culture is pretty much generic, and, you know, and being Mexican, you're going to end up with Indian blood and those cultures that mix in with the Spanish. It's all the same. And generically speaking, I guess, from one Indian nation to the next, the Starmen is just part and parcel of who we are, and we know they've always been here, and a lot of interaction over the eons.
Well, and you call yourself kind of a novice when it comes to UFO research, but you spoke not too long ago at the MUFON Symposium, and I know you've investigated a few cases. I know Kinross is one of them, and also you have a book coming up on the Fort Dix incident.
Yeah, McGuire Air Force Base, Fort Dix. Yeah, that's... Yeah, Ken Ross is the first novel I've ever written, and I'm not writing nonfiction. I'm writing fiction, and I pretty much write whatever I'm interested in. I mean, the last one, I'm sure we may talk about that, but it was about an American Indian witch, you know. But the very first book that I wrote was called The Murmurings, and in Algonquin language, it is the sesequa, which means the murmurings of the trees. And it had to do with the Kinross incident, and that was where F-89 disappeared while up on an air defense mission to intercept what it thought was a Russian bomber over Lake Superior. I'm sure you probably know this whole case anyway, but
some of our listeners don't, so that'd be great if you would share those details.
Sure, I'll try to nutshell as much as possible, but in essence, that's what it was. At this point in time, this is November 23rd, 1953, about 6 o'clock at night, Eastern Time, so we were just coming into the Cold War. I mean, World War II was over, and we were just now beginning the Cold War. Intercontinental ballistic missiles hadn't been developed yet, you know, so if we were going to be attacked by the Russians, you know, it was going to be with an aircraft. So every Air Force base all around the country, I mean, I'm talking about all around the country, everywhere, had a combination of both fighters and B-47 bombers at that time. That was the way they were set up. And so we fully anticipated and expected at that point in time from a military mindset to be attacked. So you were constantly on the watch for it. And there were ground radar stations set up all around these bases, and by all around, I'm talking about maybe a 3 or 4 state area. And in this particular incident on November 23rd, 1953, this aircraft came over and it was bopping around over Lake Superior. It, you know, unheard of speeds for that time. As a bomber, for the size of the blip it was showing and that type of a thing, it was kicking around at 600-700 miles an hour. And that was nuts. They knew it was something scary, and they knew it was the Russians. They just knew that. So they launched an F-89 fighter on an air defense mission. That means that he was charged with, there were two people in that aircraft, just like an F-18 or an F-14. You've got the pilot and the rear operator. Mm-hmm. Lieutenant Felix Montla was the pilot, and Lieutenant Robert Wilson was the RIO officer. So they launched, they went up to intercept this thing, and they got within 10 miles of this aircraft, and this thing is just kind of holding steady over the Keweenaw Peninsula, out over about 40 miles out over Lake Superior, off the Keweenaw Peninsula. And all of a sudden, it shot across the sky and merged with that F-89. Now, all these radar operators from, you know, Wisconsin, Illinois, and Michigan were all watching this on their screens. All of these, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of Air Force personnel were watching this on their screens and seeing this happen. Everybody in the control rooms, not just the radar operator. So this happened, and it merged like that. At the same time that the two blips merged, you immediately lost all squawk, all radio communication. That was it, just boom, and nothing. And then the large blip, which had been what they called an unidentified aircraft at that time, a UA, not UFO. They coined that term, hadn't even been coined yet, to the point that we know it today. So it's up there for another 40, 50 seconds or whatever, and then it shot straight south over Lake Michigan, right straight across the Upper Peninsula and right over Lake Michigan, and disappeared. And they couldn't tell if it went up, down, left, right, or sideways. It just disappeared. So the search that happened immediately after that, and I talked to guys who were on Air Force PT boats. Okay, Air Force actually had PT boats, like PT-109.
Right.
They were considered rescue boats. Nothing was ever found of this aircraft. Nothing was ever found of wreckage. Nothing was ever found of the pilots. Never heard of from again.
Yeah, then, one of those incredible cases.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a break.
Go ahead.
Thanks for sharing that story. And when we come back from the break, we'll talk some more about your research. But that's always an exciting one, the Kinross one. We'll be right back after this. You're listening to Open Minds Radio.
This is Open Minds Radio. Here again, your host, UFO paranormal researcher and journalist, Alejandro Rojas.
Hello and welcome back. We are interviewing Dave Waxesbear, an intertribal elder, an author, a speaker, a syndicated columnist, and a bit of a UFO researcher. We just talked about the incredible Kinross case, and I had to cut you off there at the end. Was there anything else you needed to add to that?
No, I was just going to add this. When the novel first came out, and once they got the reviews and folks started reading it, that kind of a thing, you're always going to get feedback, you know. So I did find out, being a retired military guy, I expected full well that there would have been two aircraft launched. You always have a wingman when you go. But the official accident reports from the U.S. Air Force only indicated just that one. They were a fighter wing that was actually covering over at Kinross from the Truax Air Force Base in Wisconsin while the Kinross fighter wing was out in Arizona doing gunnery practice. Anyway, I had two different people email me that said that they were actually stationed at Truax Air Force Base, and there was 45 minutes after that incident happened, another F-89 that crash landed there that came in hot, meaning that, you know, that she had been damaged somehow, came in hot and landed there. There's no official record of that one anyplace, but there's something out there that tells you, you know, that kind of thing. So
you think that was possibly the wingman?
No, Bob, I got very little doubt about it, sir. I mean, I'd almost go to the wall on that one. You betcha.
Yeah, that is incredible piece of news. It's an amazing case, Kinross, no doubt.
It is. There's no two ways around it. It's fascinating to me, but there are a lot of them like that.
Right. The Fort Dix and McGuire one, and those are kind of bases that are close to each other. There's Army and Air Force, and they kind of just separated by a fence, I think.
That's right, yeah.
And they've had a couple incidents, and which one are you kind of focused on in this book you're working on?
1978, the one where the alien was allegedly, and we have to say allegedly here, was shot by an Army MP.
Mm-hmm.
So in that particular incident, what happened was that the UFOs were actually winging around mostly over McGuire, the Air Force Base. And it's just, like you said, just a fence line that divides the Army base, the fort, and the Air Force Base over on the other side. And they did have some nuclear weapons, and hangars over there. And these things were, you know, flying over the top of them. So the Air Force has what's called security police and air police. I don't even know if they have air police anymore, but security police, SPs, they were all going nuts, sirens going off, and obviously, you know, with Dix being right next door, the MPs got all geared up too, so they were all running around going crazy, and everybody was looking for this, and so that's basically the incident that happened there. Do you want me to go through that one, what I know about it, or?
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, okay, well, in essence then, what happened was that the Air Force Security Command detailed this one particular airman. He was a security policeman. And he had a young guy with him, a rookie who was like doing OJT. In the military, they do that to you all the time. So he had a rookie with him, riding with him. They sent him out to one gate. Now, SPs, I mean, you got to understand with the way they used to do this is one guy would stand a 12-hour watch just walking around in a B-52. That aircraft was his, and on the base, that would be his sole responsibility. So to have these guys go out and guard a gate, or, you know, when they got some type of an alarm going on, is not abnormal at all. And so they get out to this gate, and the Army MPs are on the other side. They're all driving around chasing these things that are flying above them, these UFOs. And when I say flying above them, they're treetop high at this point in time, from my research anyway.
Wow.
And so so this SP gets out there, and they're just basically watching this gate, and they're both out of the car, him and his rookie. And they, you know, they see the flashers on the other side of the fence line, knowing that the MPs are over there and their squad cars with their flashers going. They see one stop through the tree line. They can see the flashers going, and next thing you know, they hear a 45 round. These guys know what a 45 gun sounds like when it fires, so they hear that 45 round, you know, and then they're moving around this way and moving around that way, and they don't have any light out there except their spotlights on their patrol car, and then they find this dead body. This dead body, you know, is the typical gray alien everybody always talks about. And so, you know, he radios that back in, and long story short, you know, the black suits come in and everybody does what they're going to do, and the guy ends up on Guam. You know, he's gone the next morning to Guam. So it's those kinds of things. Nobody ever knows anything about the Army MP, and when I write my novel, it's based on that particular guy's story. So
yeah, this is the same incident George Filer had talked about.
It is exactly the same one, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he talked about, being the intelligence officer and coming to work and finding out about it, and then them telling him to brief his commander, and he was like, you want me to tell him what?
Yeah, just like kind of like the Bentwaters deal, you know. I mean, you got credible people who are you know, trying to relay information that nobody wants to hear. You know, it's that kind of a situation. But,
wow.
Yeah, it's those kinds of things are fascinating to me. I'm going to be at the Burlington Vortex Conference over in Wisconsin coming up in October.
Mm-hmm.
And I went a year ago last May. I went to the one that was over in Illinois, Out of This World, I think it was. But then Jesse Marcel and I are pretty good friends, and Jesse Marcel Jr. and Devin Randall, those kind of guys. I'm fascinated because they're around this stuff so much. They know mm-hmm. so much more. You know, as an investigator, I like to pump them just to find out. But
they're great guys. Jesse Marcel Jr. of course. A lot of these guys are going to be in Roswell. They're just really nice, great guys. It's always good to see them again. And, you know, with your talking about some of these cases, how did you begin to come across some of this stuff and begin to investigate it?
Well, it was just an interest, like I said. You've heard, you probably know the song by Gordon Lightfoot, if nothing else, about the Edmund Fitzgerald, right? Remember that song? Yeah, the Edmund Fitzgerald. Well, anyway, was a Great Lakes tanker, freighter. It was a ship that was sunken mysteriously, and he sang this song, which is, anyway, it's pretty much a Great Lakes tale, more or less.
Uh-huh.
But when I was in the Coast Guard, I had access to underwater photos of that thing before anybody else had ever dove on it, before anybody else had ever seen it. They were, and I seen things on that ship, cuffs setting perfectly, on tables that obviously couldn't have been there if she went down in such a violent storm. Weird things like that. So stuff like that kind of piques my interest, and I'm just a fat old curious Indian anyway. So when I see something like that, it just kind of draws me in, and. And so UFOs are exactly the same way. It's the same way with anything that has to do with the spiritual side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Or with most folks like that, I usually tell anybody this is the last girl here. But if you're a Pentecostal, the older you get, the more Pentecostal you become. And if you're a Baptist, the older you get, the more Baptist. And if you're Catholic, no matter how it is, the older you get, the closer you get to who you are. And Indians are spiritual people anyway. And so the older I get, the more Indian I become.
Mm-hmm.
And so this kind of stuff, and it's like the Whitaku that we talked about and are started to talk about and are may talk, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
That is fascinating to me.
I did want to talk more about that, the Whitaku, because the shapeshifter. We had Chris O'Brien on recently, and, him and some of his buddies and colleagues, and they think that there's definitely a very big connection, even bigger than the extraterrestrial connection to these kind of legends of shapeshifters in the Native American tales, as opposed to, extraterrestrials with that kind of stuff.
My research, I just finished this novel, and I don't know when it's going to come out. I sent in the synopsis and some other stuff to the agent tomorrow, so I don't know how that's all going to work out, but I had a blast, telling the story, but what was even more fascinating for me was some of the research. I know what the Shawnee people think of it because I'm Shawnee, and I know what the Black people think of it because my grandmother was Black. But finding out what other cultures thought about it was interesting. By other cultures, I mean, just other Indians.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much connected, and what I think I came up with, and this is just my take on this now, is that an awful lot of the sightings that you see, as far as or hear about, the Moss Man, maybe even the Moth Man, the different things, the Skunk Ape, all of these kinds of things, I think we may be looking at it basically what most Indians would call a Wendigo or a witch, a Whitaku, the ties to, sometimes they're tied to being star men, but, I'm not thinking that's the case. But this is just my opinion, too. I mean, folks have to
draw their own
conclusions.
Well, let's talk more about that. We got to go to break in just a minute, and we'll talk more about the Whitaku, and we'll have you define that for us a little more. But I want to let everybody know at walksasbear.com, that's walks-as-bear.com, is where you can come and see his books and be able to see what they're about and also order those. So I wanted to make sure people knew about your website, walks-as-bear.com. We'll be right back in a minute. We'll talk more about shapeshifters and extraterrestrials. So stay tuned. You're listening to Open Minds Radio.
Welcome back to Open Minds Radio. Here now, former official spokesperson for the Mutual UFO Network, your host of Open Minds Radio, Alejandro Rojas.
Hello and welcome back. You're listening to Open Minds Radio. We are talking with author David Walksasbear about some of his books, and one of them in particular called The Whitaku. And it's a shapeshifter witch. If you could kind of explain that concept to people who may not be familiar.
Okay, well, let's see. how do you explain that? Okay, well, shape-shifting is got to do with the spirit world. Doesn't have so much to do with the world that you and I share. You know, it's spirit world. And within the spirit world, I mean, there are spirits around us all the time. So not all this is from a traditional Indian point of view, right? So there are spirits around us all the time. And there are good spirits and there are bad spirits. It's like for every up there is a down, well, and for every left there is a right, you have good and bad spirits. Well, shape-shifting is just a facet of the spirit world, and the bad spirit that we're talking about here is that Wiccu or Wendigo. You know, it's a witch. It's a combination of both mortal and spiritual. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
What I'm trying to say. So
yeah, to me, I think.
Yeah, well, in essence, like I said, and like we talked about earlier, I mean, these are just things that are given, things that Indians take for granted. And having worked with an awful lot of Mexican folks in my day, I used to teach English as a second language, and the guys that I worked with most of the time looked pretty much the same way as I did, you know. So mm-hmm. very common and very basic, you know. And so it's just one of those things that you take for granted, like drawing breath. You know,
someone in the chat was kind of asking about interdimensionality and how you would relate that with the spirit world. Do you think it's the same thing?
Boy, I don't know. There's everybody who's ever been in the military will tell you there are things that are above their pay grade, and for me that's probably one of them. You know, I mean it's like I don't know. You know what the Creator does, how the Great Mystery does things is totally beyond my comprehension. I'm not even naive enough to think that I can figure it out. There are basic things that I know innately, and I think all two-leggeds know. I don't care who you are. I don't care where you're from. I don't care what age you are, what color you are. You know what's right and what's wrong. You know what's good and what's bad. And folks often monkey with things that are bad because they're titillating or because they're interesting or fascinating. In a lot of ways, you know, I feel that way about the UFO phenomena. So I guess the interdimensional thing that you're talking about is something that I don't know anything about and can't say how it works. I mean, it's not part of my job or part of my need to know either. It's not need to know. In 2003, after the Murmurings came out, I was asked to be the keynote speaker at the MUFON symposium in Detroit, and so I went there and I was talking to these guys and you know, when I say these guys, I'm all the folks out in the audience the person who's been on before me has said that, you know, they didn't really know about, you know, 40 pounds of gravel they took off and that was all there was to it after they seen this UFO. And when I got up there, all I could think to say is, you know, yeah, that'd be me. I wouldn't be sticking around trying to figure out what it is because there are definite things that is at least for me, an Indian that I know, and that one of them is that not all things connected with the UFO phenomena are going to be good for you. You know, do you know what I'm trying to say by that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Very spooky. And absolutely, most things connected with shape-shifting are not going to be good for you. Doesn't mean that a classic example of that is in this state, when I wrote a column back in 2006, 2007, and it was about the Michigan Dog Man. Have you heard of that before?
Yeah.
Okay, so I wrote a column about that. I write a weekly column, and so it was just one that I sent out. And Linda Godfrey, who writes the Weird Michigan and Weird Wisconsin books and stuff, she called me and wanted to know if she could put the column on her website. And I said, sure, you know, feel free. Because I went at it from a Native American or American Indian, you know, perspective with the Dog Man in the column. And she said, well, the reason she's calling is because the History Channel is going to do an episode on the Michigan Dog Man, and she'd like to interview me. And I said, yeah, sure. And so she came up to do that, and we went through this routine, and I did my interview and explained all of that and talked about shape-shifting and how it works. And we were talking about the Dog Man in particular, and I happen to think, from my research anyway, and from the, you know, from the people of the Three Fires that I've talked to in this state, I'm Shawnee. My people are all from down south, and I'm in Michigan. But the people that I talk to here, you know, other Indians, the people of the Three Fires of the Chippewa, Ottawa, and Potawatomi, these guys all think that you know, that they're not necessarily malevolent. You know, they're just they're not really sure what they are, but they're a little spooky. You know, I mean, but
and if you could explain what the Dog Man is a little bit too.
Oh, sorry, yeah, Dog Man. The Dog Man. There are records here that I've personally viewed myself. Well, all the way back to the original French explorers here, and we're talking about the 1600s, 1700s now, and the British Army's even got some recollections of them. And then you get into the newspapers and the time from the lumbering era in the state where we've got all these people that are seeing these things. There are newspaper accounts that run all the way back to the early 1800s of the Dog Man. And the Dog Man is just seen, there's a really eerie song. The song is on my website. If somebody wants to hear it,
really?
The song is worth it just for that.
Yeah.
But basically, it's legend, okay? And there's a difference between myth and legend. Myth is just something that is made up, and legend that has some basis in fact. And so this is a legend, and by that I mean that there's something to this. I don't know what exactly, but there are folks who are seeing it all the time and have been seeing it for hundreds of years. So it's basically described as like a wolf man or whatever. I did have this. Here we go. Yeah, I got this. Okay, one of the papers that I write for is called the Great Lakes Pilot. They run my column. But a while back they ran a picture, and there's a picture of a wolf that was shot here by a fellow who's a barber in Michigan. This wolf was shot in 1935 up in the Upper Peninsula in Grand Marais, the county. This wolf man, I don't mean wolf man like the wolf man, but I mean this wolf is just unbelievable. This thing was 7 foot, 11 inches long. This 7 foot, 11 inches long, weighed
wow.
over two. Stood 39 inches at the, this guy shot it during the firearms deer season, which in Michigan has traditionally always ran from the 15th of November to the 30th of November. There's a picture of this thing here, and there's two full-grown men, black and white picture. These guys are wearing fedoras, and this wolf is probably about 4 foot over his head. It's hanging up, and it's about 4 foot over these guys' head. Just huge, 200 pounds. It had a 39-inch head. Just unreal. You know.
When was this picture taken?
Picture was taken in 1935.
Wow.
7 foot 11 inches. The thing was just massive. The Carnegie Museum in Pennsylvania actually has the guy shot it. It was chasing three deer, and this guy was out deer hunting with a rifle. And he was a barber down in Flint, but he had family connections in the Upper Peninsula, the UP as we call it here. And he went up there to go deer hunting with the family. And these three does came over the hill, and he let those go, but he heard this big roar behind him, and this monster came up over the top of it. This is back in 1935 when most of the wolves had been killed in this state. I mean,
right.
The timber wolf. This thing's massive. Every bit as big as a full-grown man. I mean, the mouth, when you open the mouth, from the bottom of the jaw to the, I'm a game warden in Michigan. That's what I do for a living. So
right.
when you open the bottom of the mouth and raise the top of the mouth up like this, we had an 18-inch spread with a 14-inch width on it. So you're talking about something that's just massive.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know where that fits in the shapeshifter thing, but obviously it died. He shot it four times before it finally killed it.
Incredible. Well, I hate to cut you off. I mean,
sure.
These shows always go so quick, and we're already out of time. So thank you so much for being on the show. It was great going over these stories, and we'll definitely need to have you on again to talk more about some of these things that we didn't get to. But
I appreciate it.
It was a lot of fun and extremely interesting. So I want to thank you. Some people in the chat were having a lot of fun. One of the people who asked about the interdimensionality wanted to say thank you, too. They agreed with what you had to say back there. So
that put me away. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for being on the show. Remember, walks-as-bear.com is the website. Next week, we're going to have Paul Davies. This is exciting. He is a producer and a director, a writer. He did the Roswell movie, the great movie showing on Showtime in 1994, starring Kyle MacLachlan and Martin Sheen. So we'll be interviewing him about Roswell and other things to get ready for the exciting Roswell Festival. Thanks for listening to Open Minds Radio, your UFO news authority. Talk to you next week.
You watch your feet for cracks in the past.